from the floods in Colorado to the meaning of forgiveness. We got a lot to talk about today, right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, from my study of Scripture over the decades, it seems pretty clear, at least to me, that at the end of the age, there will be parallel extremes here in the world. There will be utter chaos and upheaval and shaking on the one hand. On the other hand, there will be massive harvest of righteousness of souls and outpouring of the Spirit. And I'm not saying that the things happening in the world and society today are proof that we're right at the edge, the end is here. But I'm reminded when I see terrible upheaval and shaking, how fragile human life is, how important it is to know the Lord, and how wonderful it is to have our Heavenly Father as our God. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining me today on The Line of Fire. A whole lot to reflect on, catch up on, after the weekend. 866-348-7884. If you want to ask me about something that you heard in the news over the weekend, if you want to talk to me about something that is concerning you, or you just want my feedback or perspective, by all means, give me a call. 866-348-7884. Later in the broadcast, I want to address what's happening in Colorado, the horrific floods. I mean, they're saying something like this. It's not a century flood or a century event, but something that could happen once in 500 or 1,000 years. And for sure, for the people there dealing with the massive flood, and then hail, and it's got to feel like the end of the world to many of our friends in Colorado. Even as I speak, there's been a bloodshed in a Washington Navy Yard today. A man brandishing an assault rifle, shotgun, and handgun opened fire inside a building at the Washington Navy Yard. SWAT officers swarmed the building, but upheaval in our nation's capital. Just a lot of things going on. And in the midst of it, behind the scenes, in the midst of it, stories that we won't know perhaps until eternity, God is at work. God is at work. And I want to encourage you to look at what God is doing in the world today. I've got some really interesting thoughts about Russia after my talk in Nashville last night. So great to meet many folks for the first time that were coming out to the meeting, and some that are regular listeners. It was great to be there with you. But after the talk, one of our grads from our school when it was in Pensacola came up to me. He is Russian, Russian-Israeli Jew. His wife, also a Jewish believer. They live in Nashville. And we were talking about Russia, some really interesting insights about what's happening there and their philosophy and why they're doing what they're doing. And then last night, got back to my room in the home where I was staying with some longtime friends and wrote an article, started writing around midnight, but I wanted to address this. California about to pass Bill AB 154. Is about to be passed. Assume that Governor Jerry Brown will sign it into law. It's passed both houses of the legislature. And according to this bill, non-physicians, non-surgeons, so physicians' assistants and nurses, will be able to perform medical and suction abortions within the first trimester. I mean, it's outrageous. They're just trying to make abortion more readily available. And obviously, no matter what they guarantee, it can't be as safe as a doctor doing it for the mother. It's never safe for the baby. It's going to terminate that baby's life. I wrote an article about that, but in the midst of it, there's good news. Abortion clinics are closing at an unprecedented rate. Also want to talk to you about some reflections on forgiveness in the aftermath of Yom Kippur. And when we come back, I'm going to be joined from Israel by my dear friend and longtime colleague, Ron Cantor. I want to talk first about Yom Kippur and the forgiveness we experience in Jesus Yeshua, and then talk about some disturbing fundraising that Ron saw on Christian TV.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah. Okay, so it's Saturday. It's in the midst of Yom Kippur's Jewish men and women fasting and praying around the world for forgiveness. And I was not eating myself. I was at the airport, and I had earphones on and put this song on. And the earphones are cancel the outside sound around you pretty well. I mean, amazingly well. The music was on, and I just had this giant grin on my face as I was walking through the airport flying to Nashville, just thrilled with the forgiveness in Jesus Yeshua. The guilt, gone. The moment I got saved, all the deep guilt just disappeared, and the incredible sense of knowing that you know that you know that you're right with God, that He holds nothing against you, that He gives you a brand new clean slate, not because of all of our efforts, but because of His grace and goodness. Just amazing. I want to connect with Israel right now, my dear friend through the decades, Ron Cantor, in the season between Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and Sukkot Tabernacles. Hey, Ron, have you built your sukkah yet?
Well, you know, Dr. Brown, we live in an apartment that doesn't have a balcony, but I'll tell you what I did do is me and a couple of the other pastors in our congregation in Tel Aviv, we built the congregational sukkah yesterday. And if people would like to see it, that video of us in what they call, I think, lap time or something like that, it took us a while, but they can see us do it in 8 seconds. So it's quite exciting. Oh, yeah. You don't want to miss it.
Where do they see that, Ron?
RonCantor.com takes you to messiahsmandate.org, or they can see that on the Ma'oz Israel website as well. We're partners together.
All right. During my next break, I'm going to go look at that. Hey, Ron, before
it's
we talk...
It's not up yet. It'll be up tomorrow. Give us a day.
Come on, man. Your site's going to come down overnight with people flooding it, waiting to watch that eight-second video. But listen, Ron, before we get to the subject that I want to talk to you about, what you saw on Christian TV, a horrific abuse of a holy day of the year to raise funds, the way it was done, just horrific. Before we get to that, talk to me about growing up. The home you were in was not a traditional Jewish home, but you still fasted on Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur, went to synagogue. Was that part of your life habit then?
Not completely. I did not fast. The first time I fasted as a Jewish young man was right before I came to faith. And the reason I decided to finally fast, now my parents fast, particularly my father, every year, and I was always amazed by that he could go 24 hours without food. But the year that I came to faith, I was searching, and I said, you know what, I really cannot consider Jesus as the Messiah until I looked in Judaism. I didn't understand at the time that the most Jewish thing you can do is believe in Yeshua. I thought wrongly that I had to leave my Jewishness. So I said, I'm going to start with Judaism, and I fasted. And to be honest with you, Mike, I didn't find God that day. I didn't find forgiveness. I didn't find freedom. I found myself really hungry at the end of 24 hours, but that was about it. And then about a month later, I came to all those things you were talking about just a few minutes ago, freedom from guilt, freedom from sin, victory. And then after that, I realized how Jewish the New Covenant was.
Mm. You know, Ron, in 1975, I went to spend Yom Kippur. And by the way, for folks that listen or are familiar with terms, Yom Kippur is the Hebrew way of saying things. Yom Kippur is the colloquial way that we'll normally say it in English. That's how a lot of people are used to hearing it, the Day of Atonement. But in 75, I went and spent that day in Brooklyn, drove to a family, Lubavitch Chabad, ultra-Orthodox religious Jews. A family had me stay with them. And I'll tell you, it was eye-opening in the midst of the sincerity, in the midst of the praying, the fasting that they did. And it was, you know, the entire night, basically, and then all day in the synagogue. I mean, hour after hour, reciting the prayers and praying. And, and interacting with them, it was really interesting to see this incredible sincerity and effort to be right with God and really wanting to be right with God. And yet it was as clear as night and day that what they had was completely different than what I had. And the knowledge of God and the intimacy with God and that deep, overwhelming sense of forgiveness and joy, it was night and day different. And I'm sure living in Israel, you get to interact with a whole lot of people, and they go through the rituals and they try their best after Yom Kippur, but they're the same as they were before.
Yeah, absolutely. It is very interesting here watching Yom Kippur. It's so different than in America, because in America you're a tiny minority if you're Jewish, particularly me living in Virginia, with I think we had about 10,000 Jews out of well over 500,000 people. But in Israel, everyone is Jewish. So the country, it's quite amazing because the country just shuts down, and there's no traffic on the streets. Children ride their bikes on the interstate. If anyone would like to see a photo essay that I did, they can go to our website, and I posted several photos from several years ago where I was still fasting, but I biked all the way to Tel Aviv just to see the rest of the city and what they were doing. And there's just people out everywhere. And it's an amazing time. And if you are a bike store, there is nothing like the day before Yom Kippur. You are packed with kids getting their bikes fixed,
amazing,
buying new bikes.
So not quite what God intended when he gave the laws to Israel, not quite what the rabbis intended with their additions to the day. But Ron, you sent me something, morning before yesterday, and you were stirred, you were burdened, you wrote an article and were kind enough to send it to me in advance just to take a look at it. And it's prompted me that I actually plan to address these things by name on the air. But in your article, you didn't mention names, which I think was a wise and right approach right now. We are reaching out to these people that we differ with to say, hey, we think you're manipulating scripture and manipulating God's
people.
But we want to give you a chance to respond. But tell folks, I mean, you don't watch a lot of Christian TV. You happen to flip it on. What did you see, bro? What did you witness, and how did it affect you?
Well, it was interesting because it was right literally moments before our last meal, before Yom Kippur would begin. My wife was in the kitchen getting the food ready, and I have to be honest, I love the Word of God, and I love to hear people preach and teach, but I rarely watch Christian TV because as many wonderful godly men and women are on there, there's always something that just, I don't know, so I turned it on, and here's two fellows talking about the Day of Atonement, which I thought was interesting because I was getting ready to enter into the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. And basically, these fellows were saying that Joel chapter 2, where it talks about blowing a trumpet in Zion, is speaking about the what he called Rosh Hashanah, which is actually called Rosh Hashanah, not Rosh Hashanah. I guess with Russia in the news, he may have been a little bit confused. But he was saying that, and Rosh Hashanah, just to be clear, is an extra-biblical holiday. The actual holiday is Yom Teruah, which means a day of blasting of shofars. But somewhere in the mix, the rabbis turned that into a new year. And so he liked that interpretation, that it was a new year, and that you would then repent for the next 10 days, what we know is the 10 days of awe. And then on the Day of Atonement, God would pour out this amazing, what he called, not only a double portion blessing, but a sevenfold blessing. And the way you get this blessing was by giving to, well, he was a guest, by giving to the host ministry. And then the host would then take all the gifts on, interestingly enough, on midnight the 15th, which actually would be about 6 hours after it finished, because unbeknownst to them, the actual holidays go from sundown to sundown, not midnight to midnight. But he, the man of God, would then take the gifts to the altar, I don't know where, in his church somewhere, and he would pray over those gifts, and then the guests guaranteed, and Mike, you got to listen, I don't know if you heard it, but he guaranteed that once the pastor prayed, that everything that has been stolen from you will be returned. And it was so over the top, but it was the most importantly, it was unbiblical. It was unscriptural. The Bible doesn't teach us that we obey these feasts that were given, the feast of the Lord given to Israel, so that on the Day of Atonement, the holiest day of the Jewish calendar, we would get this incredible sevenfold double portion blessing.
All right, stay right there. I want to just talk to you a couple more minutes. And folks, it's so grievous, the manipulating of God's people, the manipulating of God's people to get funds and trick people into, it's sick. It's scary. All right, more to come. Stay with us.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Just want to grab one more minute with my friend Ron Cantor in Israel to read the article that he wrote. Go to his website, Ron Cantor, that's C-A-N-T-O-R, roncantor.com. He's got lots of really informative articles, neat videos, talking to Israelis, fun stuff as well. So it's a great way to stay connected with the land of Israel and the Jewish people in Israel, as well as get Ron's perspectives on a number of things. Hey, Ron, I know that you wrote a letter to President Obama giving him some counsel. Has he gotten back to you yet, or any of his staff gotten back to you to thank you for that?
No, but somebody did email me really angry and said it's my fault too, and that I should have voted against the president. This guy thought I was my cousin who was in Congress. He saw the name Cantor and assumed I was a congressman. So I had to tell him I'm not who you think I am.
All right. Well, let me know.
He's not gotten back to me.
Oh, okay. Yes, yeah, so let me know if it happens. And of course, we'll glad to have him on the radio if he wants to respond to your article. All right?
Absolutely.
So you can let him. In fact, I'm bringing the two of you on. Mr. Obama can join you, and you can sort things out together on my radio program. But Ron, in all seriousness, when you see this kind of thing, I saw the same gentleman, and we'll name names in terms of these manipulative fundraisers that are all the rage on Christian TV. Once we have given them the opportunity to come on and respond to the issues that we want to raise, I saw the same gentleman briefly one time, and it was a message he was bringing on the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's in the midst of the agony that Jesus goes through. He turns it into an appeal to give money based on some gimmick. You're going to get this amount back. Here you're about to enter into a fast. You're praying and interceding for our people to have their eyes open to salvation. How did you feel watching this?
Well, I felt gross, and I felt compelled to write about it. And again, we wrote this article that seems to be getting a lot of folks reading it and responding correctly with outrage. But you know, Dr. Brown, I just want to mention that today is, I think it's the 17th, am I right? It's the 16th.
Yeah.
So he supposedly, it in Yom Kippur actually ended Saturday night, but he was going to take the things up for prayer on the night of the 15th, which would have been last night, or maybe midnight the 15th was the night, whatever. The point is, if you go to this fellow's website, it says on the front page, it is not too late to receive your double portion Day of Atonement blessing. And when you click on it, you're able to give the gift and get your sevenfold double portion blessing. I mean, it's after the day, and they're still asking people to give money. Why? To get their blessing.
Yeah, it's scary. It's really scary. I heard one fellow on TV after going through his whole manipulative fundraising thing and all the gimmicks, he then prayed a prayer and he said, you know, Lord, if I'm not speaking for you, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. And I watched that and I thought, well, God is God and God's very merciful and I'm not here to be that man's judge. But I remember saying, I wonder if it's judgment to let him keep talking. I wonder if the judgment of God is to allow him to keep doing these things. I heard from a friend a European friend once, and he said the greatest sin of the American church is gullibility. Do you think your average Israeli would go for that kind of thing?
No. Israelis, they would find it humorous. You know, I actually took some Israelis to America once, and it was at a conference where they were, now these were legitimate, this was a legitimate ministry. They were raising funds for legitimate stuff, and they talked about that somebody had offered to match funds up to $500,000. It was a big deal, and a lot of these funds went to bless Israel and help Israel. But when my friends from Israel heard that there was supposedly some guy that was matching the funds, they laughed, and they said, oh, come on, there's nobody. This is just a gimmick. Now, it wasn't a gimmick, but no, Israelis are not the most trusting people. So when they see things like this, they're not likely to believe it.
They'll err towards the side of skepticism, and Americans often towards the side of gullibility. Hey, Ron, may the Lord continue to use you and bless you in the land, and may this be an amazing season of harvest of souls as we continue to celebrate the holy days on the calendar. I'd love to, Alana and the kids, all right?
And let me just say, you know, it's a great time in Israel right now. We're out of Yom Kippur, and we're approaching Sukkot, and people come from all over the world to be here. I just got a phone call from your former student, my former student, Daniel Kalenda, who's in Jerusalem. We're trying to get him to preach for us on Friday. It's just a great time to be in Israel. Don't be afraid. You're doing a tour in May. Friends,
Ron, tell everyone why they need to come in May. Why they need to come on this.
You need to come to meet me. No, you need to come on this trip because, if you've ever gone on a vacation and you just couldn't, you're so excited, you couldn't wait the minutes, the hours, and you finally get to go, and it's a really beautiful place, but you're just kind of let down. It never meets the expectation. Well, coming to Israel is the opposite. It will exceed all your expectations. You are going to meet Messianic believers, Messianic leaders. You'll hear testimonies from people, Israelis who've come to faith. You will learn the history. I'm sure you'll have great tour guides. I've done a lot of tours, Mike, and I have never had anybody at the end of the tour say, you know, that was really boring. I wish you didn't come. I've actually had people say, I'm not leaving. I'm not getting on the plane. But she was kind of weird.
All right. So listen, though, let's make a deal here. May 20th to 30th, are you scheduled to be in Israel during that time?
I am presently scheduled, yes.
All right. So as long as you're in the land, can we guarantee our tour guests that they will get to meet Ron Cantor in person, face to face, even shake Ron Cantor's hand? Will you guarantee them a financial blessing if they shake your hand?
There's different levels, Dr. Brown. There's the just to see me is one level of giving. The shaking of the hand is another level. No, actually, we do it all free of charge, and we would love to meet with your group and to bless them and share with them what it's like living here.
Yeah.
And again, that is free of charge. But
all
they
right,
will be
thanks.
Blessed.
Thanks, man. All right, love you, buddy.
Love your family. Love Nancy and the kids.
Got it. Yeah, we've known each other. I'm 58 now. Ron's 48. We've known each other since I was 28 and he was 18. And I hope our joking at the end did not offend anyone, as we're just having fun as longtime friends. If you want to go on the tour, though, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and sign up. Get your deposit in. Sign up. Hey, listen, no hype, no gimmicks. I'm holding in my hands Day of Discovery production, The Appointed Times, Jesus and the Feasts of Israel. It's 100 minutes long, four 25-minute programs recorded in Israel. Dr. Michael Rudelnik, Avner Boesky, and myself, the four parts, Rest, Remembrance, and Renewal, Passover, Pentecost, Tabernacles. We're about to come into Tabernacles. It's wonderful programs recorded in the land of Israel, high, high quality on a DVD. Yours for your gift of any size, all right? Be as generous as you can. Help us with our work, and we'll send this out to you. The Appointed Times, Jesus and the Feast of Israel, DVD, recorded live in Israel. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to focus now on the issue of the California abortion bill and the closing down of abortion clinics all over America. 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. As always, when we discuss things like this, I want to say to all of you women that are listening, and men as well, but in particular women who know the Lord, who love the Lord, but who had abortions in the past, and when you hear it talked about, it opens up that old wound for you. Understand there's no condemnation in Jesus. Understand that the forgiveness that he gives you is comprehensive, and that if you've truly turned to him and asked for forgiveness, he does forgive, and he wants to use you to be a vessel of life. If you're listening and you've participated in an abortion, either as the mother or the father or someone working in an abortion clinic, or someone helping to provide for that abortion, and you're gripped with the sense of what you did and the life that was terminated, well, that's a healthy feeling that you have. You should be gripped with the wrongness of it and the evil of it, but there's mercy and forgiveness in Jesus. There is mercy and forgiveness. He died on the cross to pay for every evil deed we've ever done, every single one, and through him there is complete forgiveness of sins. 866-34-TRUTH. Listen to this positive description of California bill AB 154, just waiting for Governor Jerry Brown to sign it into law, which he is expected to do. Listen to these people who are very happy that this bill is now passed, where non-physicians can perform first trimester abortions.
We did a big study, and basically over 5 years, it was determined that advanced practice clinicians, so nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and nurse midwives, provided exactly the same level of safety in their care of these early abortions. So it was proven time and time again.
Allison Harris from Planned Parenthood says women deserve more access.
Almost 50% of our counties don't have an accessible abortion provider for women. So although they have the right to an abortion, not having easy access is a huge barrier. AB 154 is great because it really expands the quantity of care while, you know, not sacrificing any of the quality. The safety's there, and now we just need to up the access.
You know, it's just so foreign to me to hear people talking about that in such upbeat terms and how great it is and how we're going to provide for more people to be able to have abortions and safe, it'll be totally safe. Of course, there's no such thing as a safe abortion. Abortion properly performed kills a baby in the womb. And any abortion has the real potential of scarring the mother emotionally for life. And abortions also have the potential of making a woman unable to conceive and have children in the future. And we have recently found out about these houses of horror, like that run by Dr. Kermit Gosnell in Philadelphia, in which babies outside of the womb were being killed, in which mothers lost their lives, in which is literally a house of horrors, now realizing there are other places like this in America. Yes, every abortion clinic, every abortion mill in itself is a house of horror because of what it does, but then some more extreme than others. And then on a regular basis, we're hearing about Planned Parenthood clinics that are violating health codes and safety codes and so on. So at a time when even within the abortion industry, you'd think, okay, we have to up the ante for and have higher, more strict penalties for those who are breaking the laws and shut these clinics down because we've got to go by the health codes and the safety codes and so on. No, let's have a new bill where a nurse practitioner, a certified nurse midwife, or physician assistant would be allowed to do medical abortion or a suction aspiration, vacuuming out, quote, the contents of the uterus up to 12 weeks. Back with more. I want to give you some good news when we come back, though.
God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I want to encourage you. There are many things in society today that look like they could never change. There are things that look just so fixed, so far gone, so locked in, that there just seems to be no way that change could ever really come. That there's no way that we can regain lost ground. There's no way that things can be recovered that have been lost. That's how it feels in many ways. But consider this. And I mentioned this in my article. It's called Taking Baby Killing to a New Low. You can read it by going to AskDrBrown.org and clicking on the latest article. That's AskDrBrown.org. Click on the latest article. Check this out, all right? In the last 22 years, so from 1991 to the beginning of 2013, 1,500 abortion clinics, actually over 1,500 abortion clinics have closed. Listen to this. According to an article on LifeSite News, in 1991, there were 2,176 surgical abortion clinics nationwide. Today, there are 660 and falling. According to Charles Wysong, who's founder and president of the American Rights Coalition, he said, "We began to notice a steady decline in both clinics and abortions after we began helping injured women sue abortion clinics for malpractice in 1986. And he says this, slowly doctors began finding out that while abortion may be legal, malpractice is not. This accountability caused many doctors to quit or never enter the abortion practice. Now, other things have happened as well. Younger generation, very sensitive to issues about victimhood and bullying. Well, children in the womb, who's standing up for the babies in the womb? And now with ultrasounds, with 3D and 4D ultrasounds, and how are you going to deny that that is a baby in the womb? Even to just call it fetus, even though that is medically correct term to use, how are you going to deny that that's a little child in the womb? So there's only so much killing and denying of reality that a society can do before something responds back, something comes back. Here's an article that's getting a lot of attention because it was posted on the Drudge Report. It was originally written in Christianity Today. It says this, for Abby Johnson, the closing of a single Planned Parenthood center demonstrated her dramatic reversal from abortion clinic director to leading pro-life advocate. But for pro-lifers throughout the United States, it marked another exhibit in a hopeful trend. Abortion centers are shutting down at an unprecedented rate. The total so far this year is 44, according to a pro-life organization that tracks clinic operations. Now, this is with only 600 and change remaining. Less and less hospitals perform abortions. Less and less doctors want to be associated with it. That is an obvious reason why this bill is now being passed in California so that non-physicians can provide abortions. By the way, there are pro-life leaders who point out that the suction abortion is a dangerous, potentially dangerous procedure for the mother, even when performed by a doctor, because he has to hunt around for the baby in the womb. And again, you look at a baby the end of the first trimester, so 12 weeks, that's a developing little child in there. In my article, I have a link that you can click on to see what the baby looks like and what's happening with the nerve endings and development of and so on and so forth. But the California Medical Association has endorsed this bill. Oh, boy. And I close my article by saying this, and I want to go to the phones. The same people who pushed so hard for the legalization of abortion so that a woman wouldn't have to get a back alley abortion with a wire coat hanger are the same ones who not only ignore the pervasive health code violations in scores of clinics nationwide, but also are taking things one step further by backing a bill whereby non-physicians can suck a baby out of its mother's womb. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Melanie in Pineville, North Carolina. Thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Mike. Good to talk to you again. I wanted to add to the good news. I volunteer for the Pregnancy Resource Center in Charlotte. It used to be called Crisis Pregnancies on 4th Street. It's been around for 31 years. We just opened a new center in the university area. We're hoping to open another one. The abortions in Charlotte have gone down 20% since 2009. And last year, our center raised over 550 babies, meaning women who came in wanting abortions changed their minds. And this year, we're projecting over 700. But the thing it's a wonderful organization. It's loving, kind, non-judgmental.
When women come in to one of these pregnancy crisis centers, what are they told? They walk in, let's say a woman's 4 months pregnant. She's upset. We know how traumatic it is for many of the women. We know they're struggling terribly. Some are very cavalier and says, hey, it's birth control, unwanted pregnancy. But others, it's a tremendous struggle. They're in internal turmoil over it. They're not sure what to do, but they come in leaning towards having an abortion. What conversation takes place? Or if you had to boil it down to one factor, what is it that turns their hearts and causes them to embrace that child that they were about to abort?
I'm a receptionist volunteer, but I would say the kindness. I mean, over and over again, we get notes and calls from these women saying that. I mean, we even had one woman who said she walked into the center and felt like she was walking into the arms of Jesus. I think the kindness and compassion, but I think it's the sonogram, the ultrasound.
Yep.
That's a very, very big factor because they see the baby. Hopefully they bond with the baby. Doesn't happen in all cases. I could tell you of some really miraculous.
The ultrasound.
The ultrasound does, the idea that the person, the peer counselor, these are also volunteer counselors who are kind. And who do, I mean, one of the things that is emphasized to volunteers is that whether these women know it or not, they are in crisis. And we're open to giving them facts about abortion as well. If they want facts about abortion, we do that. So, but the thing that I also wanted to stress is we have a class, a Bible study called Surrender the Secret. And that is especially for women who have had abortions in their past, who have been very, very burdened by guilt, who haven't told anyone, you know, their family, sometimes their husband. And this is a class for healing and forgiveness. And we have more and more women who have been going through that.
Wonderful.
So that's
address things, Melanie, holistically. We have other friends who are involved in different aspects of pro-life work, and some are in front of abortion clinics reaching out with that same love because people come in hurting and struggling. And then we have other friends that work with the moms that decide to have the babies, and they provide baby showers for them and then a place to help nurture. And so there's a network of organizations working together. But Melanie, what wonderful news. Progress is being made. Thanks for what you do, and thanks for the great report. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of babies being saved just in one city, Charlotte, North Carolina, which is what, barely a million people, the greater Charlotte. Things are happening. Progress is being made. Hey, Michelle, stay there. I want to talk to you, but we've got a break coming up, so I don't want to cut you off. I want to hear your story. But friends, if you say, boy, I want to do something, I don't know what to do. I know there's still a terrible crisis, still over a million babies being aborted every year. What do I do? Some of our friends and colleagues have established what's called Cities for Life. I want to encourage you to go there. Cities4life.org. Cities4life.org. You'll see stories and news. You'll see an explanation of what the vision is. You'll be able to get equipped with resources, and you'll be able to take action in your city. Cities4life.org. planpairenthood.org. Go there, get information, find out how you can make a difference, how you can make a very tangible difference in an individual's life that would not see the light of day if not for your involvement. And if you've got a question, if you've got a story to tell, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Thank God for progress being made against the culture of death. Let life arise. Let precious life be preserved and recognized.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, in the midst of abortion clinics and the money-making industry that this is, and don't be mistaken, people are in this for the money. Oh, some think they're helping and doing a good thing, but let's understand, a ton of this is about greed. 866-34-TRUTH. Dr. Randall, former abortionist, they, meaning the women, are never allowed to look at the ultrasound because we know that if they so much as heard the heartbeat, they wouldn't want to have an abortion. Dr. Benjamin Kalish, an abortionist. Even now, I feel a little peculiar about it because as a physician, I was trained to conserve life, and here I am destroying it. Dr. Beverly McMillan, former abortionist. I got to where I couldn't stand to look at the little bodies anymore. One abortion advocate while addressing the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice in 2001 had said, Dr. Carhart, this is, we're not asking for the right to suck the brains out of every child that walks down the street. We need to continue to offer safe abortions to women who need them to be done. Just the words alone say it all. 866-348-7884. Michelle in Brooklyn, New York, thanks so much for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Michael Brown. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. I was home and I heard your message about those Christian women who at some point in their lives had to experience abortion and living with the guilt and condemnation. And you know, it's interesting. Typically, this is something that you are not going to speak on because being a Christian woman. But I most importantly, there are no condemnation to them who are in Christ Jesus.
Yes.
And I'm very happy to hear that there are organizations that are out there that offer safe haven for women who can learn that there is another alternative. At the age that I was, I didn't have that option. And you know, thank God that he is a God that delivers. Because there are many of us women, both Christian and non-Christian alike, that are struggling and challenged by such an episode in their lives. But I thank God for that because, you know, where you can go to the Lord and ask him for deliverance, ask him to deliver you from a situation, he is able to do that. I remember once I was in a church and the Lord spoke to me and said, would you share your testimony with someone? And as I was exiting the church, a young lady came over to me and she began to tell me, she says, I want to be able to accept Christ, but I can't because I've done this thing.
Mm.
And I looked at her and I said, I too have done this thing, but God has delivered me and he has forgiven me. So if he has done it for me, he can do it for you. You know, when we live in shame, we disconnect ourselves from people. And I understand that I have done what I have done, but I understand most importantly that my God has delivered me. And because
yeah.
He has delivered me, I'm able to speak to it, to others who are out there struggling, who are probably living in condemnation, who are contemplating it, and know that there are other options that are out there. And if you have done it, know that God is able to deliver you. Because, you know, and I think what the church as a whole does, and I'm not here to judge, we make it our dirty secret, where people really don't get their deliverance and they do not get their healing because we're afraid of talking about it. But I want people to understand, Christian and non-Christian alike, there is only one judge, and that judge is God. And he is a God that forgives. And when he forgives, there is no one else who can condemn you, because God has not condemned you. So, you know, I felt really pulling my soul today as I listened to your message about abortion. And I felt pulled by the Holy Spirit. And I said, Lord, is this what you desire of me? And I pick up the phone and I'm able to share with you today. You know, we have so much work to do. But one of the most important things that we don't pray. You know, the Bible says where two or three are gathered in his name, touching and agreeing, we haven't taken it before my papa. Because I know, even in my family, when it comes to deliverance, if I touch and agree with my mother concerning anything on earth, my father is able to hear me. And so as a body of Christ, we need to touch and agree, come together as one, begin to call on the name of God. Because yes, the only person that can change our situation or circumstances is God. Because we think one way, but God has the ultimate option for us.
Michelle.
So we need to come
together. I'm sorry. Yeah, I just need to jump in because our time is short. But
I'm sorry.
I wanted to, No, that's fine. You're on a roll. And what you had to say is so important. You've spoken to a whole lot of people in many, many different situations, those under condemnation that shouldn't be, those about to make a terrible choice, and you brought life and hope to many. And yes, there's action, we need to take, but everything we need to do needs to be bathed and soaked in prayer. Hey, Michelle, thank you so much for the call. Friends, I was in Nashville this past weekend, and a man there working with Family Policy Council told me about friends of his that were at a restaurant recently in Nashville, and they noticed a table. At the table were all men dressed as women, so be called transgender, whatever phase of cross-dressing they were in. And the woman at a certain point had to go use the bathroom, and when she went in there, the bathroom stalls were filled, so she waited for a little while, and then the door swings open, and out comes one of these men. So she was just shocked. I mean, he's clearly a man. There's no doubt that it was a man. So she was shocked. She goes, oh, no, you're in the right bathroom. Because she thought, like, what? I'm in the wrong bathroom. I went in the men's room somehow. He goes, no, you're in the right bathroom. It's okay. So she's absolutely floored. She goes to talk to the manager. And the manager, his solution is, oh, well, listen, here's what we'll do. I will check out the men's bathroom to make sure there's no one in there. And then I'll stand guard by the door, and you can use the men's bathroom. I mean, this is cultural insanity. It is moral and societal madness. That's why I always remind you that we are on the radio to be your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. It's these kinds of things. Oh, and Toys R Us is going to end gender-related advertising and just sort of boys' toys, girls' toys. Now, that's too gender-prejudiced. And it's crazy what's happening. However, I have hope that the same God raising up a culture of life in the midst of abortion on demand for over 40 years, with clinics closing left and right, that the same God can turn the tide in terms of this other moral and social madness, and that he can touch these people who are hurting people who need the gospel. So let's believe him together, and let's do as Michelle said, let's pray and seek his face. And friends, I'm inviting you to partner with us, to become part of our ministry team and share in the rewards together with us of lives being changed. We have a wonderful tool. It's 100 minutes long. The appointed times, Jesus and the Feast of Israel, with two scholar colleagues of mine. We recorded it in Israel together. Yours for your gift of any size. We just ask you to be as generous as you can, and we'd love to send this to you. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today: don't be moved by what you read in the newspaper. Don't be moved by what you see on the news. Be moved by what God says in his word. From the floods in Colorado to the meaning of forgiveness, we got a lot to talk about today, right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast on this Monday as we get to reflect on a lot of what's happened in the news over the weekend and things that God is doing. A whole lot to share with you, to join in the discussion at any point, to weigh in with your own thoughts about other things that are happening in the news that you want to talk about or get my take on. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. In the first hour, we talked about a new article that I wrote, just posted early this morning. It's called Taking Baby Killing to a New Low, about a bill about to be passed in California that would make it legal for nurse practitioners, certified nurse midwives, physician assistants to perform certain abortions so you don't need an actual doctor. I mean, just another outrage in the abortion industry. I won't be getting into that in this hour, but you can read that by going to askdrbrown.org. AskDrBrown.org and clicking on latest article. If you live in Colorado, I'd love to hear from you. 866-348-7884. We do want to talk to you about what's happened in your state. Floods at the level that what are being reported, that something like this happens once in 500 or 1,000 years. And I'm sure for many who are affected by these floods, it's got to feel like the end of the world. So if you are listening on KRKS right now, give me a call, AM 990. Give me a call and tell me what it feels like in your state, especially if you have family and friends who have been affected. And some thoughts on Russia I want to share with you as well that may surprise you. 866-34-TRUTH. So a whole lot of things I want to interact with you about today. But very quickly. Yeah, this headline says survey surprise. And I tell you, it's a surprise to me as well. Christianity Today, Jeremy Weber reporting. Many Americans see Syria as sign of Bible's end times. Should the United States bomb Syria? Your answer might depend on your eschatology, whether Christian or Muslim. Lifeway Research noticed how the Syria conflict has prompted discussion of the end times, unlike previous debates over American intervention in foreign affairs. So it did a survey and found some surprising results. Almost one in three Americans sees Syria's recent conflict as part of the Bible's plan for the end times. One in four Americans think that a U.S. military strike in Syria could lead to Armageddon. One in five believes the world will end in their lifetime. Well, that one doesn't surprise me at all, that one in five Americans believe the world will end in their lifetime, given the apocalyptic nature of so many of the movies that are out there and the speculation that there could be some catastrophic event that causes the world to come to an end, plus the many Christians who are expecting Jesus to return in their lifetime. So that doesn't surprise me. But boy, that's really, really interesting. George Barna recently found that 41% of all U.S. adults, 54% of Protestants, and 77% of evangelicals believe the world is now living in the biblical end times, meaning not just from the cross, from the resurrection on until today, but meaning that this is it, this is the last generation, these are the last of the last times. So check that out. One in four Americans think that a U.S. military strike in Syria could lead to Armageddon. Well, God knows whether there's any truth to that. For my take, read my article on my website, is about the Bible and Syria, Bible prophecy and Syria. Been shared over 5,000 times. AskDrBrown.org. Just click on latest articles.
Oh God of burning, cleansing flame, send the
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just during the break, I was looking at my watch. 866-34-TRUTH, Michael Brown, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I was looking at my watch. Now, for years, I have worn a digital watch, so it shows you the actual numbers. And I've worn one with not a second hand, but the numbers you can see as well. So digital watch with seconds on it as well. And I got one of these. It's like $35-40, real cheap. This atomic watch that's supposed to sync with a satellite somewhere or some atomic watch somewhere in America, whatever the thing is, and it's supposed to stay accurate. And it just, they haven't worked properly. I've got one on my desk that we actually have to reset a clock because it doesn't sync properly. Anyway, I decided, you know, I'm just going to get a watch, you know, $100 watch or something that is supposed to stay within 15 seconds of the time, you know, for 6 months or a year or something. I thought, okay, that'll be close enough just to have on my wrist so I can be looking at this if I'm getting to the office or I'm stepping out of my office for a minute around radio time. I know the exact second, the exact time, or if I'm on the road, I can be relying on this. But it's just got a second hand that moves. So I'm not used to looking at a watch with a second hand. And it's flying around. It's flying. It's literally, time is flying. I mean, I'm looking at this thing like, whoa, look at that second hand move. So I am not downplaying the closeness of the return of the Lord. But look, when I got saved in 1971, friends, I got saved in 1971. And I was told then, it's over. Jesus is coming, you know, very soon. Got to be ready. He could be coming any minute. So it's going on now 42 years that I've been saved. And our oldest granddaughter is going on 13, you know, a few months till she's 13. But I got saved at 16. So our oldest granddaughter is about to turn 13, which is 3 years younger than I was when I got saved. And we're all still here. And I'm filled with vision for decades to come, God giving me grace and strength. So the point I'm making is this. I'm not downplaying the idea that Jesus could be coming very soon. I'm simply saying that we need to look at things differently instead of this mentality of whatever happens. Oh, this is it. This is it. It's all over. It's, oh, this is it. This is the sign of the last time. Oh, this is it. Because every generation that said that so far has been wrong. Now, that being said, many things happen. And to the people that they're happening to, it feels as if it's the end. Many things happen in such shocking, overwhelming ways for the hundreds of thousands, well, multiplied millions affected indirectly, but the hundreds of thousands and millions affected by the tsunami several years ago in Southeast Asia, that must have felt like the end of the world. For those that have suffered horrific earthquakes or been in the midst of horrific storms, it must have felt like the end of the world. So what's happening now in in Colorado, must feel to many like it's the end of the world. People talk about biblical rains. I mean, you think of the flood coming, and just a couple of quick little news clips that give the feeling. You play the first one first, Joey.
It's like everything you know and love, you just see it get swept away in a matter of hours.
One friend dead, and no idea of, you know, when we can go back and what will be left when we get back.
Yeah, just everything gone. There is gone. Just wiped out with the water. People dead, people missing, and then in the midst of it, hail. Here's a call for evacuation.
The flooding so widespread, officials haven't begun to estimate the full extent of the damage. Over the weekend, President Obama declaring a major disaster in the state. Cities like Aurora, already plagued by flooding, contending with hail that pummeled the area over the weekend. Officials in Boulder County alone say they will need an estimated $150 million to repair more than 100 miles of lost roadway and between 20 and 30 bridges.
All right, consider that. How much lost roadway? How many miles of lost roadway? $150 million just to repair the roads. You say, well, is that a clear sign of divine judgment? No, not necessarily. It could be if we understood specific sin that brought that about, that brought about judgment. It could be. Those things do happen. God does bring his judgments in the earth to this day, and he will pour them out at the end of the world. But not knowing anything specific, it's wrong for us to say, well, that must be some kind of divine judgment. You say, well, what can we spiritually glean from this while praying for those involved? And then, however, we can help getting involved to help. See, when I see things like this happen, it reminds me of how fragile life is. It reminds me as to how easily our whole world can be shaken. When we lived near Pensacola, Florida, the mid-1990s, well, I guess 97 through 2003, so mid-90s into the early 2000s, we got hit by Hurricane George. And the rain started coming down. The hurricane was a little bit off the coast, and it just stayed there, and it stayed there, and it stayed there. It was not the worst in terms of heavy wind damage, but it just stayed there. And there was a river ran nearby us in Alabama called the Styx River. And they said this was a century flood, a once-in-a-century flood, that the rain just stayed. It just kept coming and coming and coming until the river rose and then wiped out houses. We had an army, literally an army of students, hundreds and hundreds of our students that got involved and to help and just went into the houses. People lost everything in the mud and the muck, and they'd say to students, hey, could you just try to find this one thing of ours, this one piece of furniture, there's something in it. And they just went in there. It was unreal what they had to deal with. And I remember thinking, wow, it's so fragile. The world is so fragile. God made it so carefully and so beautifully, but it's so fragile that it just rains too long. And the river rises, and then the river floods. Well, what's happened in Colorado is not a once-in-a-century event. They're saying it's once in 500 years, once in 1,000 years. But one day, the whole earth is going to shake. One day, there is going to be massive upheaval. The end of Hebrews 12 tells us that God will shake everything that can be shaken, so only the unshakable things will remain. And we know that Scripture says the righteous will never be shaken. So, no, I don't see this as part of that end time shaking, although it certainly feels like the end of the world to those who've been through this terrible trauma and are in the midst of these massive floods and rain and devastation and roads wiped out and, what, over 200 people missing? Last count, I don't know what it's up to now or how many have been accounted for, but you're just talking about massive upheaval. What do you do when there's no road somewhere anymore for 100 miles? What do you do when you're just trapped and stranded? And like someone said, everything you had, everything you knew, just gone, gone, gone. But when I see these things, it reminds me of the day when everything's going to be shaken and how fragile human life is. Isaiah, the second chapter, the 22nd verse, says in Hebrew, the King James, cease ye from man. The Hebrew is very vivid. Cease yourselves from man, for whose breath is in his nostrils, for of what is he to be accounted for? Not just human beings, just, yeah, we're going to shake our fist at nature. We're going to shake our fist at God. Again, I'm not saying that this specific event is divine judgment. Yeah, and Dwight, how much have we brought on ourselves due to pollution? I don't know that you could explain any of this due to it, so check on it. Buddy, since you raised it, check on that. And by the way, for all the gloomer and doomers about the global warming and all this, you know there's been a massive increase in Arctic ice in recent years? A very, very large increase in Arctic ice. It's totally visible on satellite photography. I mean, it's undeniable. Arctic and global cooling. But put that aside. These are times that should sober us up. these are times that should get our attention. These are times that should get us praying for mercy on the earth and for God's grace to be poured out in his patience on a sinning world so that more and more people will come to know him and more people will receive his love and more people will come to know his goodness and see the ugliness of sin and why sin must be judged because it is so terribly destructive. Right, we come back. I'm switching from Colorado to Russia. Some fascinating thoughts and insights. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire broadcast. Obviously, Russia has been all over the news in recent days, and Vladimir Putin has really outdone our president in terms of getting the upper hand in dealing with Syria. Time magazine has Putin on the front cover. Oh, not here in America, though. Isn't that odd? Not in America. He's not on the front cover in America, but he is on the front cover of Time magazine internationally. And it's interesting to see things happening in Russia these days. Now, some claim that Putin had a religious conversion years back and is an awakened Russian Orthodox Christian now and cares about these moral issues. Others are very cynical and say, hey, look, he's still KGB and we can't trust him. Many don't trust the Russian Orthodox Church as an establishment as well, not to say there aren't true believers within it. But Russia has passed some laws now regarding homosexual practice, making it illegal to distribute what would be called gay propaganda to minors. And there are many pro-family organizations around the world saying, well, that's good. That's a healthy bill because there is so much gay activist propaganda to try to influence kids and so on. Of course, critics say, well, there's going to be more violence against gays. And then, of course, you can't publicly, you know, they're not going to have a gay pride parade in Moscow without it being shut down and people being arrested for it. So you say, okay, well, what's behind that? That's interesting. And then even allowing some religious education in the schools. A Russian friend was telling me last night in Nashville that he went on a website, was looking into this, researching things, and found in some of the textbooks for children in schools, they have a definition of what sin is. And then there's one day a year where they encourage everyone to take off from work, stay home, and have babies. And whoever has a baby 9 months to that day, whatever that day is, it was earlier this month. So 9 months later, if you have your baby, then somebody wins a prize, a car or something like that. You know, one of the couples that has a baby that exact day, 9 months to the day of when they were told to stay home and have babies or conceive babies. A lot of things going on there in Russia. And you say, okay, what is driving this? What is motivating it? Why are certain things being done? Why is Putin trying to posture himself a certain way internationally and so on and so forth? My Russian friend said this. He doesn't fully know about Putin's religious beliefs or not, how much it's just posturing in terms of the Russian Orthodox Church, etc. But he said it's clear that he wants to see a great Russia. He is obviously a tremendously committed Russian nationalist. When in his editorial written to the New York Times to the American people, when he said he differs with our president, when our president refers to American exceptionalism, hey, remember, God created us all equal. Well, obviously, in a certain way, he wants Russian exceptionalism. He wants Russian nationalism to rise and Mother Russia to be strong, which you would expect as the leader of his country. But you've got some real problems there. You have terrible moral issues there, not just the widespread alcoholism and lawlessness that can exist in certain ways, but according to stats that my friend had looked into, for every 1,000 babies born in Russia, 1,200 are aborted. Many women have had 5, 6, 7, 8 abortions, just birth control for them. The birth rate has gone up a little, but it is still precipitously low, because when you have too few children being born, then there's no support for the older generation and there's no growth. There's no ability to expand the country. The civilization will ultimately die. There are other countries faced with similar situations, Japan being one of them, some European countries, because of low birth rates. In America right now, if not for Hispanic immigration and other immigrants, our birth rate would be beneath where it needs to be, which is an average of 2.1 children born per couple. All that to say this. My Russian friend, committed believer, Russian-Israeli Jew, he said that he personally thinks that the main driving force for what Putin is doing is the health of Russia in terms of its own growth in population, that he sees these issues in terms of the country is failing to reproduce at a high enough level. So what's he going to do? He's going to fight against these other factors. He's going to fight to encourage men and women to have more kids. He's going to fight against certain social factors that he feels are contrary to this. He feels that religious values must be reinstilled in order to get people to have more children. Obviously, the more that gay rights is involved in a country, the more marriage deteriorates and the less gender distinction you have and the less emphasis on reproduction and so on. These things all go hand in hand. So that's the theory. That's the theory. According to official estimates, almost 1.2 million abortions are performed in Russia every year. That's the number we have in America. That equals out to 300 babies every hour. According to unofficial projections, however, the true abortion rate could be as much as double that figure, which means that close to 2% of Russia's potential population is being terminated every year. Yeah, the stats are very high and very striking and very disturbing. But again, what is motivating Putin to take some of the stands he's taking and to become more religious in his tone? Is it just that he has become more religious, or is he feels this is the only way for the survival of his nation? Interesting questions. And who thought, after the crumbling of the Soviet Union and Russia just not taking the lead, it seemed, in so many ways, to now be having such a key role in world events? And as much as Americans, probably most Americans, don't trust Vladimir Putin, they've seen clearly that he has won the chess match against our president. In fact, one of our politicians said disparagingly that Putin's been playing a chess match and our president's been playing tic-tac-toe. We need to pray, not that America will be the world's greatest nation, but that we'll fulfill the purposes of God as a nation and be a light to the world through the gospel. All right, friends, we have a wonderful, wonderful resource. It was recorded live in Israel. Many of you are going to be with me in Israel next year on our first ever tour next May. Recorded live in Israel, two other scholars, Jewish believers, Mike Rudelnik, Avner Boesky, and myself, we were there. And it's 100 minutes long on a DVD, 4 25-minute programs on Jesus and the Feast of Israel. What a perfect time to get it now, as we're in between Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, and Tabernacles, Feast of Tabernacles. And it's yours for your gift of any size. Call the appointed times. Record it on location in Israel. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. It'd be our delight to send this out to you for your gift of any size. Thank you. Thank you for holding our hands up, standing with us, and helping us get the message out.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we're going to get into some controversial issues. You're surprised that we're getting into controversial issues here on the line of fire? No, I think not. Obviously, we tackle the controversies here. We're not afraid of the hot button issues, but we do our best to treat things redemptively, to treat things with life and hope and truth. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us on the broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. And if you'd like to talk about something happening in the news, if you've got some insights, or if you've got some questions for me, 866-34-TRUTH. Be sure to go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. Be sure to go there and read my latest article. It is called Taking Baby Killing to a New Low. Just go to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest article. If you missed any of the previous articles, they're all there archived for you. All right. I don't watch Saturday Night Live, but there are all types of skits and satires that Saturday Night Live type groups, organizations have put out, some in worse taste than others. And there is a video that was put out, Sarah Silverman, and it's calling for a black NRA. It is a it's a mocking gun control video saying that there needs to be a specific black National Rifle Association, and it's just racist. You could say, well, it's just meant in humor and so on. It meant to be humorous, but in point of fact, it has really stirred up a lot of negative feelings. And to their credit, different black leaders and folks that, I'm not talking about some conservative politician in a suit. I'm talking about people in dreads and all, you know, and rappers and different ones weighing in saying, hey, this is out and out racist, stereotypical, and you don't even know the origins of the NRA and where it stood when the Democratic Party was the pro-slavery party and the NRA was the pro-freedom of slavery group. But just listen to a couple of these responses. Number seven, Joey.
I'm sure you know good people who live in the war-torn South Side of Chicago who are not criminals, but I guess you're too busy making jokes about gun control to remember the black church-going woman who can't afford to leave but walks to church every Sunday, or the young black male who works overtime to support his family and doesn't gangbang but because of economic reasons can't move out but legally has a gun to protect his family. Everyone in this video is guilty of promoting the idea that all young black men are criminals to be feared. Because God forbid the Second Amendment apply to everyone, that would mean even young black men can own guns too. And obviously, that should scare every white person in America to vouch for more gun control.
Yeah, this is a black American speaking, Kolian Noir. I'll try to pronounce his last name, N-O-I-R. And there are a whole bunch of guys getting involved, and they mock this mocking video, and they are rightly outraged as black Americans. Clip number eight.
This is a race-baiting video of the highest order. I mean, think about it. Take a volatile social issue like the Second Amendment, suddenly imply that the largest organization in defense of that amendment is racist, then swipe your comedian plausible deniability card so you can wrap it in satire without consequence, then throw in a few black comedians who are largely disconnected from the issue but who are desperately trying to remain relevant, and send it out to play on perceived insecurities of blacks and the historical racist undertones of gun owners in this country. Isn't that ironic?
Yep. I was so glad to see this pushback. I was so glad to see these things addressed. Look, friends, the propaganda, the nonsense, the racial divisions that get stirred up, there's going to be a pushback. There's going to be a price to pay for people that overplay their hand. When we come back, some quotes that'll stir you a little bit from some anti-creationists.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We need moral, cultural, spiritual revolution in America. And you know what it's going to be based on? It's going to be based on truth. Everybody say that out loud together with, maybe can't where you are, but if you can, truth. Truth is a good word. Truth is a wonderful word. I talk to non-believers and say, hey, let's just pursue the truth. I talk to counter-missionary rabbi friends and say, hey, and they agree, let's just pursue the truth. 2 Corinthians 13:8, Paul says we can do nothing against the truth, but only for the truth. You can lie, you can spread misinformation, you can attack the truth, but truth is ultimately going to stand. That's one reason that I walk with great confidence in God, because I know that truth will ultimately triumph. And if you're on the side of truth, even if you get maligned now, even if you get slandered now, even if you get misunderstood now, even if you, if the truth is submerged under lies, truth is ultimately going to triumph. And we've got nothing to fear in that respect. 866-348-7884. Look, in my own journey, when I got saved, I was challenged with my faith in Jesus and, well, you're wrong. Jesus is not the promised Messiah of the Jewish people. And then talking to these rabbis, many sincere, passionate men that I talked to, very committed to traditional Judaism and would challenge me in very serious ways. When I started college and grad school, all the studies I did were with people who didn't agree with my beliefs. I never studied with a born-again believer that held to the same views that I did. I studied with some atheists who were actually hostile to religious faith. I studied with some people who were really skeptical of traditional views. I studied with some traditional Jews who revered the biblical text but totally rejected the New Testament. So I'd be challenged there. I'd be challenged about contradictions in the Bible. I'd be challenged about all kinds of other things. And I took the challenges seriously. I knew that Jesus had changed my life. I knew that the Word of God was true. And yet, I knew there were serious challenges to it. And I remember saying to myself, okay, if what I believe is true, then it can withstand all of the challenges. Then it can withstand all of the tests. Then it can withstand the obstacles and the opposition, because ultimately truth will triumph. When Jesus says in Matthew 24, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away, it's not just because they are divine words, but because divine words are true words, and you cannot overthrow the truth. Again, you can, for a period of time, through deception and through other means, over a period of time, you can obscure truth. And people, can fall into deception, but you ultimately can't stop the truth. You know, Matt, I'm thinking about writing on this, about the refuge of lies, and more people are talking about this, but some of the biggest things that have happened in America in terms of legal decisions, some of the biggest cases, Roe v. Wade, 1973, based on a lie. The whole story was untrue, and of course, Norm McCovey's with the Lord now, went to be with the Lord just some months back, but her whole story was false. She got saved a few years ago and a colleague of ours baptized her. But the whole story that was the premise for Roe v. Wade was false. It was false. And then the Lawrence versus Texas decision, which has been such a major decision in the gay activist movement, that was based on a setup. The whole thing was set up to force the courts to address a certain issue. And now you have the Matthew Shepard situation. You say, what's that? Well, have you heard about Matthew Shepard Day and things like that, and Matthew Shepard Bill? And what it is a bill against violence, discrimination against gay and lesbian people. Well, of course, we all stand against violence, and we all stand against mistreating other people, period, no matter who they are. Human beings should all be protected equally under the law. But Matthew Shepard was a young man who was brutally beaten to death. I mean, it was just a brutal, brutal crime. And immediately he became the poster boy in his death his mother and others campaigning from that he was killed. It was a hate crime because he was gay. He was killed, and that the guy singled him out because of that. Well, sometime after, one of the main culprits said, that's not what happened. It was all drug related. It had nothing to do with him being gay. And now a book by a gay researcher and gay author says, well, actually, the two of them had a sexual relationship. It was all drug fueled and so on. And it was not a hate crime in that respect. And reading on gay activist websites, they said, yeah, well, look, it was based on a lie, but it served its purpose. It served its purpose. Ultimately, the refuge of lies will be exposed. There's a verse in Isaiah 27 that addresses that in a different context, but I look at that as a larger principle. The refuge of lies will ultimately be exposed. It may take a generation or two or more, but it will ultimately be exposed. 866-34-TRUTH. Well, what do you do when you hear God mockers talking? When you hear people talking who disparage God, who disparage the idea of God, either as atheists or agnostics. So you have Bill Nye, the science guy, who will get better known because he's going to be on Dancing with the Stars. And you have Bill Maher. So they're influential on different secular networks, and their voices are heard by many people. Listen to some of the mockery from Bill Nye and Bill Maher just from 3 days ago. Joey, let's get clip number 4 ready. Just have a couple clips to play, and we're going to reach out to Bill Nye, and we're going to see if he'll come on the radio to have a debate. Now, hear me, not just with someone who believes in intelligent design, like William Dembski, or someone like Hugh Ross, who's been on with us a good number of times, an astronomer, or Fuzz Rana, a biologist, who are old Earth creationists. They agree that the Earth is millions of years old and the universe billions of years old, but they are absolutely believers in the Creator, and they do not believe in Darwinian evolution. I'd love to have them on to address Bill Nye, but we're going to invite him to address a young Earth creationist, because that's what they disparage. What happens is the moment they hear about intelligent design is going to be taught in the school, they now make it into young Earth creationism. In other words, there are plenty of people who believe in intelligent design, that you can clearly see that the universe was intelligently designed, who are old Earth creationists, who believe that the universe is billions of years old. However, the moment the name intelligent design, or the word intelligent design comes up, you'll have the mockers immediately attack it and then associate it with young Earth creationism, which says the Earth is less than 10,000 years old, etc. And how could anybody believe that? It's so unscientific. So we're actually going to invite him on with the hope that he'll do it. We're also going to reach out to Jonathan Sarfati, who's absolutely brilliant scientific scholar, who is a young Earth creationist. All right, have at it, Bill. Go after this guy who obviously must be completely ignorant, and perhaps with that bait to say, hey, here's a young Earth scientist who's happy to debate you. Maybe he will join us on the air. We'll find out. But this is what he has to say. Clip number 4.
Innovation is what's going to make the United States economy grow. And in order to have innovation, you have to have scientifically literate students being graduated from all kinds of schools. Now, this seems objective, as you say. It would seem like, who wouldn't want the United States to innovate? Isn't this the greatest thing?
Right.
But you have this situation in Texas where people want to have creationism in textbooks.
Oh, sure.
So here you go. Here you go. If you're going to have creationism in textbooks, which generally speaking, as I understand it, would be advocating presenting intelligent design as an option. To say, now, there's one theory that says this, in short, that nothing created everything. There's another theory saying an intelligent designer created, designed what we have, which makes more scientific sense, and presenting those as options. And I don't believe it will be young Earth creationism that's primarily taught in different school districts. It could in certain places, but I don't even think that's what's being pushed. It's intelligent design. Oh, but if you're going to push that, and this is Bill Nye, of course, on Real Time with Bill Maher, if you're going to push that, then you're pushing ignorance, and America will lose its innovative greatness because you'll be graduating idiots, I'm paraphrasing here, who believe this nonsense. We'll wait on the next clip. We don't have time to squeeze it in. The music would drown these gentlemen out, and we want to hear what they have to say. But one of my favorite quotes, yeah, and this is a very well-known one, Sir Fred Hoyle, astronomer, professor of astronomy at Cambridge University, once said, "The chance that higher life forms may have emerged in this way is comparable with the chance that a tornado sweeping through a junkyard might assemble a Boeing 747 from the materials therein." Oh, but if you believe that, you're enlightened, you're intelligent. If you believe that a designer designed the universe, you're just ignorant. God of light,
hear our cry. Send the fire. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
According to the science guy, Bill Nye, another couple hundred years, creationism won't exist. The thing that's so fascinating is that there are scientists who say the more study that we do, the more that we learn, the more impossible it will be to be an atheist or even an agnostic because of the clear evidence of design in the universe. One of the famous Einstein quotes is that the most amazing thing about the universe, to paraphrase it, is that it can be comprehended. In other words, it has an order. It operates by certain formulas. You say, yeah, well, they discovered the formulas by which it exists. Yeah, who programmed it? Who set it up to do this? So one more comment from two men mocking the idea of God, the creator, Bill Nye and Bill Maher, and perhaps the Lord will touch their hearts, bring them to repentance, and they will become advocates for the truth.
If you claim that the Earth is 10,000 years old, that's just wrong.
No, they say 5,000.
5,000. It's just wrong. The Earth is flat. No, it isn't. And so this is to your point.
Well, you're quoting facts. How much do we really know about facts? See, that's the problem, is that facts themselves have become subject to debate.
Oh, man. But, no, it really is troubling because...
Religion is the enemy of science. And when people say we can reconcile science and faith, no, we can't.
Well, what's interesting, again, there are plenty of intelligent design people who do not believe in young Earth creation. They believe that the Earth is millions of years old and the universe is billions of years old. And then there are intelligent design proponents who are young Earth creationists. So one of the tactics of those mocking intelligent design is to make everyone that holds to it into a young Earth creationist. The young Earth creationists are happy to stand up for themselves and argue their points. But something fascinating happened last year. A book was published. I've referenced it in the past. A book was published by an atheist philosopher named Thomas Nagel, New York University. Oxford University Press published it, so a prestigious book, called Mind and Cosmos, Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False. Now, he's an atheist. And he says plainly, I don't want there to be a God. He does not want there to be a God to whom he must be morally responsible. And whatever other reasons, he doesn't want there to be a God. This book was voted the most despised science book of 2012. Now listen to what he says. Language is slightly technical, but we'll make it plain for you. I believe there are independent empirical reasons to be skeptical about the truth of reductionism in biology. In other words, nothing to do with religious faith or just presuppositions, but independent empirical reasons. You can logically survey this and look at this intelligently and be skeptical about the idea that there is no force behind nature, that everything, as we say, nothing created everything. He says, physico-chemical reductionism in biology is the orthodox view, and any resistance to it is regarded as not only scientifically but politically incorrect. But he says, for a long time, I have found the materialist account of how we and our fellow organisms came to exist hard to believe, including the standard version of how the evolutionary process works. The more details we learn about the chemical basis of life and the intricacy of the genetic code, the more unbelievable the standard historical account becomes. It is prima facie, highly implausible, that life as we know it is the result of a sequence of physical accidents together with the mechanism of natural selection. We are expected to abandon this naive response in favor of a fully worked out physical chemical explanation, but in favor of an alternative that is really a schema for explanation supported by some examples. He said, my skepticism is not based on religious belief or on a belief in any definite alternative. It is just a belief that the available scientific evidence, in spite of the consensus of scientific opinion, does not in this matter rationally require us to subordinate the incredulity of common sense. That is especially true with regard to the origin of life, Dr. Nagel says. Again, this is an atheist philosopher writing. I realize that such doubts will strike many people as outrageous, but that is because almost everyone in our secular culture has been browbeaten into regarding the reductive research program as sacrosanct on the ground that anything else would not be science. So in other words, to say, well, there must be an explanation outside of just the physical material world. Oh, that's not science. Well, why isn't it science? If that's the most logical explanation of the evidence, why isn't that science? He says, I have argued patiently against the prevailing form of naturalism, a reductive materialism that purports to capture life and mind through its neo-Darwinian extension. He said, I find this view antecedently unbelievable, a heroic triumph of ideological theory over common sense. I would be willing to bet that the present right-thinking consensus will come to seem laughable in a generation or two. So here you have Bill Nye saying, yeah, another few centuries and there'll be no such thing as creationism left. Here you have an atheist philosopher saying, let me say it again, I would be willing to bet that the present right-thinking consensus, meaning about Darwinian evolution and naturalism in particular, that everything just has a natural explanation, will come to seem laughable in a generation or two. May the Lord hasten it. Of course, you've got this report, Huffington Post Science, religious people branded as less intelligent than atheists in provocative new study. Scientists behind studies included in the review most often suggested that religious beliefs are irrational, not anchored in science, not testable, and therefore unappealing to intelligent people who know better. If you're a believer, does it mean you're a dope? Well, according to Jordan Silberman, who was the co-author of the study and a graduate student of neuroeconomics in the University of Rochester, I'm sure there are intelligent religious people and unintelligent atheists out there. The findings pertain to the average intelligence of religious and non-religious people, but they don't necessarily apply to any single person. Knowing that a person is religious would not lead me to bet any money on whether or not the person is intelligent. Oh, you better believe this will be reported as religious people are idiots. Hey, you know what? We don't have to boast about our educational backgrounds. I'd rather boast in the Lord. I'd rather boast in who he is and what he does and let him be glorified even through the foolishness of the preaching of the cross. Hey, friends, if you value the radio broadcast and appreciate what we're doing, we've got a great tool for you, and it's my gift to you. For your gift of any size, it's 100 minutes on DVD recorded on location in Israel with two Jewish believing scholars, myself. It's called The Appointed Times, Jesus in the Feast of Israel. Yours for your gift of any kind. Help as you're able, and help us help many others. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, let's reduce everything to the basics. Let's go back to the fundamentals. Let's look to the one true God and preach his Son boldly. Angel.